dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. My name is Bruce Knox, and I'm inviting you to listen to us for the next hour or so as we bring you show 268. It's our second basketball show of the young season, and it, like all the other podcasts, are brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Give them a call, 740-773-7529. You can also find them on the web at triplecrownfamilyfuncenter.com. They're located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. And they are open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. We want to tell them we so much appreciate them. If you're out there, you might mention us. Tell them that you heard about them on the podcast. That's always a great thing. I'd like to bring in the other two gentlemen with me this evening or this afternoon or whenever you happen to be listening to this, maybe in the morning. First, let's say hello to John Bruce. John, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing very well. Basketball season's in gear now, and I'm sure you've been hitting the hardwood a little bit this past week, haven't you?
Yeah, if you followed my team, you'd probably know that I'm a little happier today than I would have been if we were taping this on Tuesday or Wednesday. So a little better weekend than the way it started. So I'm feeling great.
You're always good for those good times, yeah. Aren't you? And we also want to say hello to Shane Combs. Shane, how are you?
Oh, excited. Yeah, guys, this has got the potential to be one of our best SBC Sports Talk shows in quite a while. It's a lot of really neat topics and some different things that I've been excited to talk about. Plus, I know a really good interview coming up here soon.
Okay, mm-hmm. Why don't you go ahead and just give us a little head start on the agenda here?
Well, as always, Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic, and Crown Hill Golf Club will drive the agenda. And I think throughout each segment, we're going to be talking maybe a little Kawhi Leonard, Patrick Ewing, the Dream Shake. All of those things might creep into the show here at some point tonight. But as we talk about topics that have maybe, in the eyes of some, become more of a professional college rank, I'm going to talk about how I understand that, but maybe how I don't quite agree with it. There could be some math involved. I know sometimes people get mad when we say when they didn't know that there was going to be math involved. So I'm telling you, there could be some mathematics. We may have to lean to John's expertise there because I don't know if I'm smart enough to figure all that out. And then we'll obviously talk plenty of SVC players and teams and things from throughout the action that's already happened and things that are going to happen. So that's always a given on SVC Sports Talks. But again, appreciate not just Triple Crown Family Fun Center, but Advanced Services, North Fork Animal Clinic, and Crown Hill Golf Club. But I know we have something kind of special that we want to get to first before we turn Bruce loose on the agenda. So we'll go ahead and maybe start a little differently this week, if that's okay, Bruce.
Sure is.
Well, this is a really nice opportunity for SVC Sports Talk, guys, something we've been looking forward to. We're going to be joined early in the show here this week by Josh Jones, and people around the SVC know Josh well. He's had a history of as an outstanding coach in the SVC, does a real nice job teaching the game and organizing the program. And now Josh is a principal out at Edina into administration and doing a really nice job there as well. And, you know, Josh, I'd just like to welcome you to SVC Sports Talk. Appreciate you giving us a chance to talk to you.
Well, hey, guys. Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know that over the years, you and I have gotten to know each other real well through sports and through coaching. And, you know, now, as I said, you're in the administration and really happy for you there. I guess my first question would be for you, throughout all your sports, throughout all your coaching, what made you kind of go into this particular study of records? But, you know, you talk to us about that before we get into the actual book.
Well, when I about 19 years ago, when I was coaching, I realized at Zane Trace that we didn't really have any records that were documented there. Everybody was going off kind of a hunch of what certain records was, like what most points in a game by an individual. So I found a bunch of old stat sheets left by Gary Kello. They were laying around, and a guy by the name of Shorty, everybody knows Shorty. we started talking, and I started assembling the records. I'm just there just for the Zane Trace boys, and the longer I did it, it kind of expanded, and one of the girls, and eventually I collected so much stuff, I just started assembling records for the county. And I never thought I would make a book out of it. About a year ago, I thought to myself, you know, I'm doing all this research. I had it on a hard drive. I was like, what if I lost all this?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to put it out there and make sure it's always there somewhere.
Well, I'm just so excited. I purposely kind of buried the lead here because I wanted people just to kind of hear it from the start for you. Obviously, the reason we have you on this week is this particular book. I'll let you kind of give the title of the book and just kind of tell us about what people are going to find in the book.
Well, it's titled the Scioto Valley Conference and Ross County Basketball Record Book. And that's exactly what it is. It's a record book. There's SCC records for boys and girls, individual records, Ross County records. Then I've got some SCC history, Ross County League history. I mentioned like the all SVC, the players made all SVC all the way back to the very beginning.
Mm.
And I even put some stories in here that I found in the Gazette. Most of the stuff I found, I've collected newspaper articles from the Gazette. They're back to almost the beginning of basketball in the area. And then I even put some like little bibliographies of some of the best players we've had in the area in here. So it's a pretty neat document to look at if you love basketball around here.
Well, that's certainly, you know, I think I'm probably one of the first that'll be in line to buy. I know that, you know, I speak for John, I speak for Bruce here. Obviously we love covering the kids and loving the different things. And I know just in the recent history of doing SVC Sports Zone for the last decade, the inconsistencies that you find in stat keeping in the overall records, it's tough because as you get a lot of coaching turnover, maybe files aren't kept and different things aren't kept. I know, you know, some coaches maybe, particularly as you get back into history like you did, maybe they didn't keep blocks or keep steals or keep field goal percentage in terms of missed shots or and so forth. This may be a wide open question. Maybe pick out some examples or however you want to answer. But I thought it was an interesting thing to talk about the inconsistencies in the stat keeping and the records. Did you run into that problem?
I ran into that problem a lot, and that's why I say that the records in this book will not be 100% accurate because there were certain coaches that didn't track certain stats. I'll give you an example. One that sticks out to me is Larry Jordan. His senior year, he had 598 rebounds in one season. But there are no rebounds. I don't believe his rebounds were tracked off one junior season, so nobody really knows what his career rebound total was.
Wow.
So that's one thing I've tried to track down and can't find. But, yeah, there's certain time periods in there where you'll see some coaches that tracked everything and some they may not track blocks for certain players. So, yeah, there is a – it does make it hard to make it completely accurate.
Well, I tell you what, we could sit and talk for hours, and I've even taken a look at some opportunities maybe to have you on the show throughout basketball season to talk about particular things like that question right there. I think that could be a whole show in itself. But coming up on the holiday season or people right here in the heart of basketball, let's talk about how people can get one and maybe even throw in there what the money's going to be used for. I know there's really some neat things that you're hoping that the money will go towards.
Well, the cost will be $12, and right now I have them at the school. Mac, I'm going to have all the home boys and girls basketball games, but I'm also wanting to put a link here at svcsports.com where people can order. And then I can get them to them that way if they can't make it out to a basketball game or to the school. And all the money's going to go to the SVC. And one thing I would like for that money to be used from the SVC is we offer a scholarship now started last year for one boy and one girl to an SVC athlete. And this money that's made coming from this could help go to that scholarship.
Absolutely. I know we, as a league, had given that away at the spring banquet, if I'm not mistaken, last year, correct? To the one boy and one girl. And that's a great cause. Well, Josh, like I said, I'm really excited. I know that you and I have just kind of been linked together towards our love for this type of thing. And I know there's been a mutual respect in terms of you appreciating what we've done here in the recent history and me having such a passion and so impressed with what you've done in terms of your study and putting these things together. And I can't thank you enough. As someone that knows how important sports can be and how important these types of things are just to the archives of our league and our county. I know I speak on behalf of a lot of basketball people around the area when I say really appreciate your efforts.
Well, thank you. I want to thank you for all the help you've helped me with. You know, like you said, we've kept in contact and you tell me a lot with some stats that I've been looking for. So I appreciate everything you're doing too.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, fans will be able to look on the website, see this link here in the upcoming week, and we'll keep it up there throughout basketball season to make sure people can get copies as long as they're available, and we'll help spread the word in any way we can. So, well, Josh, you good luck with everything. I know I'll see you at games throughout the year. You keep Dustin England in line out there to Dina, and I will I'll catch up with you soon. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Again, that's Josh Jones, a current principal at Adena, but you know, obviously having him on this week to talk about his book, The Side of Valley Conference and Ross County Basketball Record Book. Really excited about that. Again, make sure you check out the website to get that link and to find out how you can get your hands on a copy as soon as possible.
All right. We appreciate Josh coming on. And right now we're going to talk about what's coming up next. All of our basketball fans have heard the term of load management. Next, we ask if you are okay with applying this to the high school level. And as we get into this segment, it's going to be brought to us by Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. You can schedule a consultation today on their website. Their website is advancedservicesHVAC.com, and you can give them a call, 877-947-4499, celebrating over 20 years of serving Southern Ohio. So, Shane, you mentioned this concept of load management, and why don't you just kind of explain the topics that have kind of come into us here at SVC Sports Talk about this.
Funny to me how this term was used, because again, I think people who really follow basketball at the higher levels, I guess, John, this would probably be more of an NBA term, wouldn't it? We've heard it a lot with the Spurs as an organization, would be an organization that has come to my mind over the last decade. And then, you know, speaking of them, as Kawhi Leonard went on to play for some different teams now, for those that may be not familiar with it, load management basically just refers to really paying attention to how many minutes, how many games a particular player is going the wear and tear on their body. And they basically start to figure out the set schedule in terms of scheduled days off or games off, I should say. And that's the idea. So this has started to creep down, into some conversations at the college level, and then, you know, throughout some different things, we'll talk about how many summer games are involved now and so forth. But through all that, John, it kind of turned into a high school discussion. So there's about four or five different ways I want to go with it tonight. So without getting too far ahead of myself, I guess I want to start with the hot topic here, particularly on the boys' side. And that would be on the Friday, Saturday night. You know, when we talk load management in a very short-term window, we're talking about the boys game. Obviously, a lot's been made of how they play the Friday night league game. They come right back on Saturday night, play another league game. So you get these back-to-backs, as they're called, you know, there in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would just ask you, you've been around the boys game for a long time now. Is it hurting the SVC product? And why?
Well, I would say the Saturday night games are affected a lot because it's maybe it doesn't determine outcomes, but it determines quality of the games. Because I just think that if you get into a really physical matchup on Friday, I don't care who you are, you're going to be a little worn out on Saturday. And you know, it's, and with how the game is being officiated now, it's almost okay to just beat people up on the perimeter. So your guards are going to be a little tired. And then does that mean Saturday night, there's probably more turnovers, there's less scoring, and it just is a bad brand of basketball, kind of in my opinion. And also I kind of think that Saturday game, us playing Friday, Saturday almost takes away some of the better quality non-league games that we could have, because a lot of leagues are playing, you know, Tuesday, Friday, while we're playing Friday, Saturday. So we're kind of stuck with, when we look for non-league games on Tuesdays, they're not always great quality. And then now you kind of just throw out, okay, well, two of our biggest league or non-league games, Zane Trace and Logan Elm, was played on a Thursday, and Chillicothe Adena is being played on a Monday. So, I mean, it's just, it's to me, I just think we're almost past the time when the league needs to switch back to the Tuesday, Friday, which I will say this, when it first switched from Friday, Saturday to Tuesday, Friday, about, what was that, 10, 15 years ago, I hated it. I was like, oh, this isn't going to work. And I think it was better than what I expected. You know, after a couple of years, I was like, oh, okay, this works out. Now it's back to the Friday, Saturday. As a coach, I don't like it. So I think it takes down quality of play, and you can't, how are you going to practice for those teams on Saturday? Because you can't look ahead on Friday. Because if you do that, then you're losing, and then you're having a good chance to lose again on Saturday. So that's just what I feel.
Well, you know, I've really been in nearly hours of conversation through either, you know, via Twitter or text or email or just face to face here over the last couple of weeks. And I'm really trying to be open-minded to all of it, because I find myself really in the middle here. I certainly want to better understand it. I think when I think of product, I certainly get the physicality and the physical nature, but I also think of game planning. So yes, the practice time would help, but I would even throw this out there. Let's move over to the girls' side, John.
Oh yeah.
And say, let me just show you a different side of this. In the girls' game, as I've become more familiar here in the last 6 or 7 years, it's been a complete eye opener. And I've talked to Jeff Miller about this a lot, and Brett Carino, and some different coaches that have been doing it for a while there. When do you practice harder? So, like, when you do go, say, a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday morning, those are about the game nights you're going to play in girls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always say you better be better. You know what I mean? It's one of those, like, you better be the better team, in other words, because there's just not a lot of time to prep. Or when do you practice hard? When do you get better? I grew up, I guess where I'm doing my best not to be so close-minded, is I grew up in the Friday-Saturday night as a boys player. And then when I was a varsity coach, it was still Friday-Saturday. I guess I've never known any different. And it was one of those things that you just kind of knew what to expect and how to prepare yourself mentally and physically and so forth. But you also had the opportunity to really get after it in terms of practice. You had the opportunity on a Tuesday, Wednesday to really, really get in there and go hard and really work on some things. I find it very difficult in the girls' game when you're not going to practice on Sunday. And you play the Tuesday, Thursday, boys game on Friday. If you've ever dealt with high school girls from, say, 3:15 to, you know, 4:20 when the boys game's setting up, that that practice is terrible. So it's a situation where your practice time becomes very, very difficult to come about. So I guess for me, I at least love the aspect of the practice Monday through Thursday. Yeah. Before I make my second point, what would be your response to that? Would you like the long practice week where you can really, you know, not just get ready for your opponent, but really dissect those one or two things that you need to do well?
I think it just kind of depends, because like you said, like you can really hammer home on the things that you need to work on. So I'm like, for me as a coach, I'm looking forward to having 4 days of practice this week to adjust on some things to get ready for next, you know, Friday, Saturday. But at the same time, I like to be able to game plan for each team. So that's where I would like to have a couple days in between. And honestly, I don't know what other leagues do it this way. I would like to see the SBC switch it around all together. So like we have the junior high games Monday and Wednesday. Well, that's rough on them. So why don't we make them Monday, Thursday? Have the varsity boys be Tuesday, Friday, girls Wednesday, Saturday. Okay, then that leaves, you know, that gives us something every night anyway, for basketball fans to go see. But at the same time, it gives everyone a couple days to prepare. And yes, that would take away the long weeks where you can really work on yourselves. But I think it would be something that I think it would work. Obviously, I'm sure there's 8,000 reasons why it wouldn't work. But, you know, I like the longer weeks for practice, but I don't love them. I would, you know, like to really get back with how we played on Friday to kind of keep that momentum going. But now we have a week off, and hopefully we can keep it going through that. So that's my only issue on the whole week off in between games. But, you know, I'm very open-minded on adjusting this and making it a better brand of basketball.
John, I wanted to comment on your second point there too. I thought the officiating was an interesting topic on this because, you know, in working with some young guards here over the last 5, 6, 7 years at some various places, it's really changing. I look back, I feel like I was an above average high school player, certainly wasn't a star, but I was an important part of a really good team. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure I could play the position in today's game, you know, at the level I did then. I was slow. I was non-athletic, dependent on skill. And I just think back to like my freshman and sophomore seasons specifically, the athletes I competed against would have just flat destroyed me in today's game. And I think you make an incredible point. You know, like when we really start to look at not just the post, which we'll talk about in more detail later in a great topic on tonight's show, but also you mentioned the perimeter. And, you know, how you could talk to 4 or 5 different officials and you might get a different version of what is a hand check. Is it one hand? Is it two hands? Are we putting the forearm in the ball handler tonight? Are we not? Whatever that might be. So I was intrigued by that a little bit. But, I don't know in terms of the games. A lot of people are going to throw out the 22 games, I guess. You know, Bruce, I don't know. Do you want me just go down through these as
sure,
a group, or
yeah.
You want to go one by one? Okay.
No.
Well, I was just going to go ahead and group the number of games that are played throughout the year at this physicality. Now, I have a hard time believing that 22 games is really that big a factor here when you consider how many games these kids play in AAU now. Summer shootouts. Remember, summer used to be individual skill set. It used to be individual camps. It used to be then open gym where you'd come in and stay in game shape, and that's where you would get the time playing with your teammates. You would go and you'd play a lot together there. But now, goodness, we may go through June. And I know summer games aren't quite as long as, say, a regular season game. But, I mean, it's very possible that – yeah, John, help me out here. Maybe I don't know. In June, is it far fetched to say between Monday Night League and shootouts and camps and all these things that you could play almost 30 games, 40 games?
That's definitely a pretty good estimation. Because like we went down to the Ohio OU camp this year, and we played 18 halves, so we more or less played, you know, nine full games, right. And that was in a 2.5 day span. So on top of, like you mentioned, the shootouts, the Monday night leagues, if we went down to like Jackson, some nights we would play 3 games in a week, 3 games in a night. It was usually 2, but sometimes it'd be 3. So, I mean, we did that 4 weeks. I mean, there's another, you know, and that's similar to where, but you're playing over an hour, so you're playing a game. you know, you're playing so many games at that time, and yes, it's a little less physical because, you know, it's kind of the summer. There's not a crowd really. You don't have necessarily an entire lineup there, but it's still pretty physical and, you know, can cause a lot of wear and tear on a body.
Well, I guess that's where I was going with this is, you know, more than in the regular season, if we play Friday, Saturday night, hurting the product, to me, I guess I look at the culture of AAU, culture of summer league, culture of the multiple sports and the AP prep and us preparing our body and so forth. I get all that. I guess I just ask is, do you think that's what's hurting the product more, just period? You know what I mean? I guess the question started as a comparison to Friday, Saturday, but if we're going to truly talk about the product, I think we can all agree that the game's far more athletic than it was 20 years ago. Yes. I don't think anyone debate that. But when we talk skill set and we talk about, you know, details and winning, you know, I just wonder sometimes is this a culture thing that's kind of hurting the product and hurting some of those things? I mean, again, I don't want to be the old guy, as I always say, that says, get off my lawn. But it's one of those that I have a hard time believing that some of those things don't impact the body in a different way. Because I assume most of these people going through this in June and July, they're in weightlifting for football or seven on sevens or playing summer baseball as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I would guess so. I do think with AAU, it takes away a lot of the team building skills. So you're going to be able to individually dribble and, you know, drive to the basket, but are you really going to be able to shoot? Because it's so much one-on-one stuff, too much on individual skills to me, and that don't really translate to a more of a team game. You know, so it's great to play, but sometimes it's not great to play certain styles, like, you know, like kind of some ways the AAU circuit can be. I know a kid who went to play on a team and played for a really good team, and he talked about how it was just miserable because he'd pass the ball and would never get it back. It would just be one of those things. And so I know, you know, a lot of coaches have to work on just team building things, team passing. How to run off screens, because they're not necessarily doing that there either. You know, I do think that has taken away a lot of, you know, a lot of how the game looks also on the product. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier with the summer shootouts, you're not playing necessarily your guys, so it might hurt your rotation guys on, you know, who all's necessarily playing on those nights. You know, if you've got kids out of state for baseball or working in football, well, maybe they're not at basketball and not necessarily improving in certain ways that you would hope for. But then when it comes time on Friday, Saturday nights and in the winter, they're back there and they're so athletic that they can definitely play. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things that are taken away from the product, not necessarily just the Friday, Saturday, but I do think Saturday has a big deal with it.
Yeah, and we could go on and on here, Bruce. I think it's some good topics. I think the NBA game is certainly officiated for the better. I think they're freed up a little bit more in space than they were 20 years ago, where I'm afraid the high school college game is more physical than ever. Mm-hmm. Plus the skill set going down. So, you know, you group all those things together, I think there's good things, there's bad things from all of it. But gosh, it's hard to say from Friday to Saturday. I will say this, I've always felt like Saturday night is a player's game. And looking back on it now, you know, coaches would kind of, you know, use certain drills here and there to kind of prepare maybe for both games at once. But I know I played for a coach that never mentioned the Saturday night opponent throughout the week ever.
Mm-hmm.
But now looking back on it now as a coach myself, I could kind of see the way he kind of prepared us for little things, but then we'd always come in on our Saturday morning, you know, shoot around and do those things. So, gosh, I tell you, being in the girls' game has really given me some different perspective on what's better in terms of practice time, or when you get your work in and so forth. So I know Bruce, you'll give some contact information later. I know the feedback was just unreal this week, though. So I think these topics are fun things to discuss and something that most people do have an opinion on.
This is carrying it way, way above what you're talking about, but do you think that there are some coaches out there that rest kids, not necessarily for a league game perhaps, but for a non-league game, that they may set them more or not dress them or something like that? Is that just – that's kind of overkill, is it not?
Well, John, I don't feel that way unless – now, John, you touched on this last week when we talked about the preview and stuff. I don't feel like that's the case unless there's – an injury going on or concern. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, we're talking about 15, 16, 17 year old kids that can, you know, go play. But sure, if there's injuries or different things there. Now I will say this, John, with the days of more trainers around and medicine, you know, growing, you know, we certainly have some fancier names now for injuries. You know, right. I mean, back in the day, we sprained our ankle. Where now, you know, we stretch the ligament from here to this, you know, whatever. You know, so you sprain your ankle. So I do think that's a lot of the case. And I think a lot of those decisions are being made for us. Would you agree with that, John, in terms of
– Yes.
You're getting told as a coach when to put him back in the game.
Mm. Yeah. I agree. I think there's sometimes if you go to the trainer or you go to the doctor, well, we'll see when you're back. It's right. You know, it's kind of out of the coach's hands, and you know, maybe that's for the best. I don't know, because you know, back in the day, you may have just played through an injury or may have skipped out on the trainer just because you didn't want to get held out long. Mm-hmm. I know. Now, when I was at Westfall, we had Miss T, you know, who was the trainer forever, and it was almost like a running joke of, don't go see T, because she was 100% gonna do what's best for you and probably hold you out. We were like, make sure you are, if you're going to see Miss T, you're going, you know, you're probably not coming back, because she was just so good at her job and she cared so much for the kids, which is exactly what the trainers should do. And I think pretty much all the trainers I've dealt with, thankfully, are like that, you know, care for the kids, and obviously they cheer for them, but you know, this is kind of, you know, yeah, you get 4 years to do it, but you also don't want to have stuff linger for so long if there is an injury that could easily just be fixed pretty quickly. Yeah. If you just take your time.
And Bruce, that's where I always say, you know, I'm a coach, not a doctor. And in all seriousness, that's changed a ton in the last 20 years of you kind of wait to know when the player can go back in. Mm-hmm. You know, a good coach hoop story, high school teammate of mine, you know, he went through like three jerseys on a Friday night against Zane Trace. The next night against the Dean, he was a little lightheaded. I'm guessing the night before he probably had a concussion in today's time. You see what I'm saying? Like it would have been, you know, now – does that mean anybody back then didn't care about kids? No, it just meant that we've come a long way in those areas, and we're a little bit more precaution. We have a little bit more people on site now that can recognize symptoms and so forth. So we've educated ourselves. So obviously we're not here to tell kids. I always ask kids, are you hurt or injured? You know what I mean? And it's one of those things that, you know, I need sometimes, you know, someone that knows far more about that. You know, it's my job to attack the 2-3 zone. I need to go get help if you feel like your knee's hurting. So that's where I come from. I really lean on people to figure out the best interest of the kid to help me understand when it's safe to put he or she back out there.
All right. Well, like Shane mentioned earlier, we will give contact information a little bit later in the show. And we'd like to hear how you out there, what your thoughts are on this concept of load management when it comes to SVC athletes and so forth, and whether or not you favor the Friday-Saturday type of thing or maybe a Tuesday-Friday kind of thing, and how you feel AAU, maybe summer shootouts and multiple sports and self-training and all that kind of thing is – are we doing too much with the players over the season? So, guys, up next, we're going to continue to let the fans drive the discussion as we look at the lost position in basketball. And it appears not every basketball junkie can agree on the cause. And this section of our podcast brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff can be found at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, or you can give them a call, 740-773-7387. Also, look them up on the web at www.northforkanimalclinic.com. Well, as we kind of talked about, had a lot of... a lot of Twitter messages, text response, and so forth, reviewing the foundation of this topic here, Shane. So I'm going to kind of get out of the way again and let you talk about this. Again, we can talk back and forth on several of these topics, but I'm just going to let you kind of talk about what you've received this past week.
Yeah, let me go ahead and talk about the topic first. The topic is the back to the back, back to the basket post player. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people even refer to it as the old school back to the basket post player because, again, it's not as big a part of the game today as it was certainly 20 years ago, but I would even say 10, 15 years ago, you'd still see a lot more of it. And I think there's a lot of reasons why. I think all of the Twitter discussion, all the messages I've seen, the text responses, the different things. I've talked to coaches. I've talked to some people of all ages, too, which has been really interesting to hear. I've talked to people that have been in the high school game, the college game, and so forth. And I guess maybe the best way to go through, you said we talk back and forth, Bruce. If I'll tell you what on this one, if you to make sure we don't get talking in circles, if you want to kind of
that never happens. Yeah, sure.
If you want to just go down through a point at a time, it might allow us to really hit some of these key points that have kind of come to us. These are things that have been generated again through all of these discussions in terms of talking about the post player.
All right, so we're going to talk first about how the 3-point shot may have affected this. Go ahead, Shane.
Well, John, I would love to hear your thoughts on this. I think certainly the 3-point shot, as you go back through time, has certainly changed the game, not just at the high school level, but at the college level as well. I think for the longest time, your dominant post players, when you think of some of the great college teams from Bill Walton to Patrick Ewing, the Team Elijah Wan, so forth, all these different guys that have come up through and gone on to be incredible NBA players as well. That started to change a little bit when the 3-point line started to spread the court out a little bit. I think, when a lot of the teams in the bottom half of these major conferences, but really in the mid-major, started to realize that we're not going to be able to recruit 6'11", say 6'9", in the post. So, right now we're trying to go and we're trying to recruit, 6'8", 6'6", in the post. We're getting killed. So why not go out and just almost recruit the extra forward, the extra guard, the extra perimeter player there that we can really spread you out and shoot to three, and it becomes the great equalizer. And as time's gone on, that's certainly grown in the game and kids have fallen in love with it. And that's probably hurt the post play quite a bit, hasn't it? Just your thoughts on the 3-point shot and the role that it plays in this topic.
Yeah, I kind of just throw out something that, when you're interviewing Josh, it reminded me of all this research that I did for the Union of Basketball site that I built, which now that I know that book is coming out, I wish I would have just waited. It would have saved me a lot of time. But when the 3-point line came out, there were articles in the Gazette talking about, who can make this shot because of how far out it was. And, when there'd be teams that would hit like 2 or 3 threes a game, and it'd be a big part of the story. And it has caused, a major shift in the game. I do think people are more athletic because I know when I was in school, we had a bunch of 6'3" and 6'4" kids, and we looked huge against most of the rest of the league. Of course, that was in a league with Chris Skaggs, so technically huge, but not 6'11" huge. So I mean, we had a bunch of guys that were, you know, back to the basket post players, where now probably one or two of those guys would have been post players, and the rest would have been wings or guards. And you know, it's just kind of how the game has changed. I do know that, you know, a lot of kids that are kind of put in the post when they're younger tend to just grow quicker and then don't really keep growing. So you end up having to learn new skills. I just think that it's the back to the basket is something that it's a little harder to be taught by coaches that tend to be guards, or tended to be guards when they were growing up. So I think the 3-point shot's a little easier to coach in some aspects. So I think that might have something to do with it. With the floor spacing, and being able to attack the 3-point line has made it to where the dribble drive is, something that you see a little bit more often as well. I think that, you know, there's all kinds of different ways the game has changed, and I do think the 3-point shot has a huge deal with why the back to the basket is maybe not eliminated, but pretty close to it.
Well, it's interesting for me on the official situation again here, because to me, the 3-point shot, gosh, I could do an entire segment on why I love the 3-point shot. I could probably give 6-7 different things, but the one thing about the 3-point shot, it's one of the few shots in today's basketball game, other than the free throw line, that you can take where you're almost protected by the official. I mean, think about how many tough twos, I call them, you know, in terms of the post play. It doesn't matter if you're a 6'2 post player, if you're Dylan Swingle. Think of Dylan Swingle's career, how much he was just absolutely beat to death. And I know he was big, and, you know, that's what people would say with the Chris Skaggs or the Dylan Swing. Well, they're huge. They should be able to tell you. Well, whatever. It's a foul. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's when you go to post up, not only how physical it is to get position, but then how basically every shot down low becomes an and one in that type of finish, or on the drive, on the mid range, a little up and under move or a different thing. It's tough. The 3-point shot to me is one of the few shots you can get in today's live game where you're almost protected by the official. You're able to get it off with space. That is the one place they'll usually protect the shooter if he or she's hit. And I think that has a lot to do with it. So I think that point you make there, John, was really well said.
Yeah, you know, if you just look at simple math, also the 3 is worth more than 2. So
we should write that one down. Go ahead.
You said we were going to go to math.
Yeah.
So I thought I would break that out. But you know, if you shoot 50% on your twos and 33% on your threes, you're getting the same amount of points. But if you also, a big thing that the 3 also does, it sometimes can grant you more possessions because the long rebounds makes it a little more difficult to, you know, pull in as a defense. But the back to the basket, if you don't score it, you're more than likely not getting the rebound. And, you know, it's with the kids being less skilled on the back to the basket also, that could have a big deal or a big thing to do with, you know, why teams are kind of going away from it as well.
Well, that last point there, because I know his – where he's starting to put the math into play here leads us into the next topic, Bruce. But real quick, he made a point. Again, I think it would be a great topic just to almost break down the 3-point shot and why it's so valuable. But, you know, I know as a coach at a smaller school where throughout my career, most nights we've been a little bit, you know, outmanned or you're trying to close a gap or so forth. It's a situation where the 3-point shot's the equalizer, and it's also the situation where John just said it. It gives a smaller team that will work and play really hard a little bit better chance to offensive rebound. So that's well said too. So I think the 3-point shot is certainly one of many things that I would put on why the back to the basket post player is starting to die.
Yeah, as I was listening to you guys talk about this, I'm not as well versed in this stuff as you guys are, but it occurs to me that, you know, we've kind of done away with the 3 seconds in the paint that used to always get called multiple times a game, occasionally you see that not even called throughout the game. And then the hook shot has completely gone away with your back to the basket mm-hmm. kind of player. So our next kind of thing here is the NBA college game and days of data. I think this is where you're going to come into your math, I think, a little bit. Is that correct, Shane?
Yeah, well, John, I'll kind of – you touched on the, you know, three more than two, and you have to shoot the – you know, you don't have to shoot yeah. the same percentage and all that. But, you know, you and I are huge baseball guys, and this certainly drives defensive alignment and all these different things. I think technology and data and the analytics is the big word you'll hear in terms of how it drives. And I think a lot of people view it as tough shots. You know, when you're getting down low and you're making these moves against contact and against different things, people start to – the analytics are starting to just tell you that the mid-range jumper is a low percentage shot. And mm-hmm. and I think that stuff has come more from, you know, the NBA and college game and worked its way down with the days of huddle and crossover and the different advanced stats that we are able to get now and shot charts that we're able to get now and so forth. I thought Andrew Day made a great point. He's going to be our coach's interview in Great Seal Sports in the issue coming up. That's going to be the issue here around Christmas time that highlights Emily Coleman and Colby Swain and some great mm-hmm. point guard information there. But Andrew, who's off to an incredible start at Adena, by the way. Yes. Andrew's a former player of mine. He's a fascinating guy to talk the game with. Very, very intelligent. And he was talking about how, you know, he was a very skilled foreman when he was in high school. And I was asking him about how that position's starting to go away a little bit. And he made the point about the higher levels of basketball and about how it's become a very isolated game. He said, but the difference is those people spent their entire lifetime, you know, mastering their craft or their skill set. He said, the challenge we have at the high school game is to get kids to understand that, you know, without hurting their feelings, hey, you're not that good. You know, so mm-hmm. you have to be able to, you know, play within a team concept and move the ball and pass and cut and do those types of things. And I thought that was really interesting. But don't you think that with the NBA and college game that these analytics have certainly started to drive, hey, let's get to – let's shoot the three – let's shoot free throws, let's shoot layups, and really everything else on that shot chart in the twos area, so to speak, is starting to kind of die off, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And you kind of – you see it, you know, if you're on like NBA Twitter, which is the craziest Twitter there is. It's – well, I would say the craziest like thing that sports people would get on Twitter there is. But – you know, they almost ridicule people for taking mid-range shots. Now, I would never do that. I mean, it's if you're going to make 2 points, make 2 points. But I understand what they're saying of, you know, why not take a step back and shoot a three? I remember Coach Lovely would always make sure to tell us, like, watch your foot or watch your feet. Because if your foot's on the line, that's the worst shot in basketball. Because why are you shooting a 19-foot 8-inch 3 when you could be an inch back and shoot a 19-foot or 19-foot 8-inch 2 and you could shoot a 19-foot 9-inch 3, you know, it's 4 points. You know, it's something that, you know, the data you see from, you know, the NBA and college game gives why shooting the three ball is much more important area. Much more a factor than shooting the twos and the back to the basket and, you know, how it can kind of stop flow of the game and everything. It's kind of out there as well. You know, I do think that, but if you also look at those levels, you got guys that are just shooters. JJ Redick, you know, has made millions of dollars from just being an elite shooter. And obviously he can do a lot of other things, but if you get a good back to the basket guy who throws in the ball in, on a kick out, well, it's going in more times than not. And you know, high school kids are, you know, we had Brandon Kennedy graduated a couple years ago who for his senior year shot 50% from three. And that is, I mean, he's one of three people to ever do that in the state
right.
for a season. So, I mean, you just,
you know, why would we have him shooting twos when he actually shot a lower percentage from two that year? So why would we have him shoot twos when,
you know, well, but there's yeah. a great example. Don't you feel like with his skill set that, you know, when he went to put the ball on the floor, and that improved throughout later in his career.
Right.
When he went to put the ball on the floor, he was much easier to guard, wasn't he? And then he probably yes. had to take tougher shots in terms of his skill set and so forth because of the way he worked. But that's not to say that if he was open at 15 feet, he wasn't going to knock down shots too. It was just a harder shot for him to create maybe with his skill set. So I do think kids grow up and that line defines, okay, for a kid like Brandon, hey, this is the shot I need to spot up and make. And I do mm-hmm. think it kind of defines the game. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think he's a great example of that.
What else are we missing here, guys, that's kind of led to the change in the post player or the back to the basket personnel?
Well, I certainly think the officiating plays a role. We talked about that. Yeah. I think the 3-point shot, I think the NBA college game, but you know, there is no doubt in my mind what we are missing. And John, I thought John was going to go there earlier and he almost did, but it's, I think it kind of goes the other way. We keep wanting to say the NBA and college game is bringing it down. I mean, when we're talking about those players, we're talking about the greatest 1% in the world to play the right. sport. I think it goes the other way. I think it's Little League. Hmm. I think it's, you know, Bruce, you talked about, you know, the Skyhook, or, you know, we could look at the Dream Shake, or yep. or the greatest moves of all time that we think of that are unstoppable, and these people have, you know, perfected that particular craft. And I'm not saying we have those at the high school level, but I think what happens in Little League now is this. We are all the way down to selecting 7, 8, 9 kids per grade level. So what happens is, you know, when you're tall and you're young, you're probably a little bit clumsy. Your coordination probably hasn't caught up just yet. Mm-hmm. And this is even more so on the boys' side than the girls, but really it's boys and girls. And it's a situation where you may not all of a sudden be the most popular pick on a travel team. You know, I even hear stories of schools the size of a Uniota or you know, these Division II schools of where, you know, they used to get 30, 40, 50 kids out, where now they're down to only allowed to have one team. So they're like trying to keep 12. Well, you know, that's hard, you know, and you still try to have other Little League and you still try to have different things. So I've said before, the high school coaches, their hands are tied to the situation. But what's happening on this topic is this, and it's hard for me to be convinced differently. These kids are being pushed away from basketball at a young age. So they go. So, John, you said it, the most skilled post players when they're younger, it's probably because they grew a little bit early. Mm-hmm. So they grow to be like 6'6", 6'1", 6'2". So our answer to this is the positionless basketball and so forth. But we've never really opened the door in Little League to keep that kid that's going to someday grow to 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", and really teach to play with the back to the basket. And in terms of the way we did in the generation before, I know my dad, who was at the junior high level for gosh, about 25, 30 years, you know, I didn't appreciate the job he did until I started coaching varsity, because, you know, I know what dad did in his program was he taught kids the seriousness of practice for an hour and a half and the importance of these fundamentals and the different things. And it wasn't always about the, you know, dad might have lacked in an X and O here and there or whatever, but he had a true understanding of how to go into a practice, you know, for an hour and a half, and hey, we're going to drill and we're going to practice the right way and we're going to do these things. And I think that a lot of that footwork and a lot of those different things are lost now because, you know, at the Little League level, we are playing a lot more and we're losing the opportunity for these kids to develop. So, you know, that kid that is really tall in the fourth grade but not clumsy, he's not going to help your travel team win this Sunday. And I'm afraid that we're pushing that kid away a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on Little League or even anything else that was on your notes, John, that we're missing?
Well, I completely agree with maybe we're pushing away these kids too early, and I hate seeing it, obviously, because you never know. And then also – I feel like you know, some of these kids are going to these individual trainers to work on skill set, and they're not focusing on what the skill is that they may need. So if we have any trainers that could work with bigs, you know, that'd be something great. You know, and you kind of mentioned, you know, when we were talking about the NBA and college, you know, we're almost in a highlight era where the kids are seeing, you know, people making all these threes. The game's becoming, the NBA game is even becoming like more European, of the more wide open, where everyone can shoot it. I mean, Dirk was one of the first ones that really brought that. But I think a lot of these kids now just are like, oh, I'm 6'4", I can shoot, you know, instead of worrying about working on some inside moves or anything on the interior. They're like, well, I'm not big enough to play a 4 or 5 in college. Well, that's, you know, that time will come. We're going to work on post moves right now, because, you know, there's a time in a game where, you know, I'll just throw out from when we played Logan this week with Reese Wheeler. We went to him two straight possessions, because the third one was a fast break, but two straight possessions starts the second half, and because he knows how to score with his back to the basket, he's able to do it, gets us a couple easy baskets, and, you know, we go from down, I think, 5-4 or 5-1 or something. Just because it's still a value in the game to be able to go and say, okay, well, that guy's going to get me 2 points. And I do think we need to celebrate the guys that can still do it. And I know there's different guys across the league that can do it. And just Reese kind of just popped in my head right there. But, you know, it's something that I hope comes back into basketball. You know, I enjoy being able to take some kids down and show them the dream shake, even if they never actually do it in a game. And just not telling them what I'm going to do before I do the move and then score on them. They're like, coach, how'd you do that? Well, you know, I've watched a lot of basketball. So, you know, then throw it out there and watch them try to do it in practice. And ends up being kind of fun, because, you know, if you can put in a new move, even if it's like back to the basket, kids are going to, they're going to try it. And if they have success, then they're going to get better at it. And I think that's where the game will have to come back to it, is once these kids can see that they have success, you know, in the post, that they want to do it more. And, you know,
well, and the post move can be for all positions. We keep saying positionless. It, you know, guards can really have success down there and go to work as well. I think that's what's lost in all this, and I think it also has impacted X's and O's. I mean, even when we went from a lot of the traditional 3-guard, 2-post lineups and we went to the 4-guard, 1-post lineup, most of your quote unquote 41 offenses still wanted that posting up. Mm-hmm. You know, just the idea was to open the paint up a little bit more and give he or she room to operate, where now it seems in the day of your dribble drive and you know, even some of your shuffle cuts or your flex cuts or so forth, it's more of a catch it on the cut and score, or 5-out, spread it out a little bit more, or get a dribble drive and a dump pass, those types of things. So it's certainly I still think there's room for a kid that you're going to have to be able to defend the perimeter a little bit athletically, but I still think there's room, especially in the high school game, for a kid that, you know, can punish teams for playing behind. Because defensively, John, I know more and more teams are becoming more open-minded to playing behind the post than you would ever seen before, because, one, teams won't even throw it in there, and, two, when they throw it in there, kids are basically a bunch of turnaround jump shooters.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this is good stuff, Shane. Again, another something that we would love to hear some fan discussion about. We've heard a little bit, but we'd like to hear more. And again, contact information is coming up in just a little bit. Well, with all the fan discussion, we certainly don't want to lose a chance to talk about the teams, players, and the other headlines from the past week. So we'll do that when we come right back. Hey And our third segment here going to be brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. And they, too, can be looked up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. Give Kevin and the staff a call. See what they can do for you and your golfing needs. Lots of times to buy for that golfer on your Christmas list. We're not that far from the old Christmas time. And gift certificates, what was it, Shane, you mentioned last week too that Kevin had talked to you about some special program was going on?
Well, Kevin, obviously they have the gift cards and the different things you can get them, but he also has some of the opportunities for some teaching, you know, so you get some lessons and different things. So yeah, the best thing there is just to call them and let them know what you're looking for. And especially for the high school level, I know that and some of the kids and the juniors and so forth, that he does a lot of incredible work for them. So something that if you have that golfer on the list, something you definitely want to take advantage of.
All right. We're going to move into something new here, something we're going to call Weekly Winner. And it says right here on the old script, Shane, explain this segment of Weekly Winners for Boys and Girls.
Well, the main objective is, I don't know, probably the production staff get a little bit more creative maybe with the name, but I guess that we had these ongoing topics that I promised people over the last couple of weeks we would get to.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Obviously, the whole reason we do what we do is to not just highlight the game and talk about things that the games, but just to talk about the teams, talk about the players and the individual performances and so forth. So we certainly didn't want to shut that out this week. So I thought we'd just have Bruce kind of throw out back and forth to John and myself some different things, and it'll allow us to talk about some teams and some players and some different performances, John, that maybe caught your attention. We'll go ahead and put the boys and girls in play. You can do one or the other or both, or just, you know, whatever's in your notes there when it comes to these topics. We'll just try to highlight a bunch of teams and a bunch of kids.
Okay, and we'll start off with simply a headline for the week. John, why don't you give us a headline for this past week?
Well, Shane, I thought you were going to steal my thunder when you started talking about Coach Day at Edina. My headline, the Edina girls possibly ahead of schedule, question mark. You know, a 4-1 start, 2-1 on the week. And the game they lost, they played a really good Logan Elm team tight until about the last 4 minutes of the game. I talked to Coach Miller. He was impressed with them. You know, they're really young. But man, their talent's starting to really show through. Big games this week from Hannah Stark, Michaela Lovely, Jaden Smith, and Jenna Martin. You have McKenna Lovely, Fogelsong, among others that have all,
you know. Shai Nader had a good week.
Yes, that was another one I forgot to have down. But you know, there's seven players right there. And it's, you know, scoring might be an issue for them. They haven't put up big points, but they are athletic enough to defend, and they're doing it really well, keeping teams down well below their scoring averages and keeping themselves within striking distance. I was really impressed with their win over Westfall this week. I thought that was a big step forward for their program to beat a good Westfall team that is picked to be one of the top teams in the league. Really impressive showing this week for the Edina girls.
Shane, how about a headline out of you?
I'm going to say just basketball in general, it's too early to say. You know, I think sometimes what happens is people have some knee-jerk reactions, more so on the negative side. I think by all means, you know, John just gave a great example of it. If your kids that you follow are off to a great start, that's obviously very positive and something that, you know, you want to be optimistic about, you want to be excited about. But I think what happens too many times early in the year, there's a lot of factors there. I think people hit the panic button way too fast. Mm-hmm. I think we know in coaching, John, unless you just have a team that's locked and loaded, or a team that, you know, really, you know, came out of last year and this experience, and you really kind of knew throughout the summer what your identity was going to be. I think more of the norm is the other side of that, isn't it? I think it's more, there's probably more, I would say, that's maybe a fourth of the teams. I think three-fourths of the teams are out there still into the Christmas break trying to find themselves a little bit.
Yes.
A lot of times you're dealing with youth. You're dealing with injuries. You're dealing with maybe it's just scheduling. It may not even be that you're that bad a team. You may just have four or five games on your schedule that – realistically, you weren't going to win more than one or two of them. So it can be that. John joked in the opening about his team, like, hey, winning's fun and losing's not. Right. So, so sometimes I think it's just too early to say. So when I look at some of these things, don't get me wrong, there are teams that certainly catch your attention. Adina Girls being one, the Uniota boys, the Zane Trace boys, very impressive in some different things. There's certainly teams that we're going to highlight here. There's certainly players we're going to highlight, but at the same time, just because a certain player, he or she only scores, 7 or 8 points in a game, doesn't mean they're not going to be a good scorer this year. Mm-hmm. The same way, just because they explode for a big night, it's unfair to ask them to average that. So I guess that's where I would come from. It's just too early to say. Sometimes you just got to slow the roll, when it comes to the early expectations and kind of give the sample size a chance to grow.
Do either of you have a second headline that you want to work in here, or does that do it for the headlines?
I think I can get most of mine through the team and players that I'll be talking.
Same.
Okay.
Same with me.
We'll go on then. Next topic is team. What's your weekly winner for the team? John, we'll go to you.
All right, I said the Zane Trace boys went 2-0 on the week against Division II schools, including a absolute shellacking on Greenfield on Saturday night. Which I know Greenfield's down, but I can't remember a time a Greenfield team has ever lost by 46 to anybody, let alone Zane Trace. But the really impressive game during the week for them was their incredibly tough win up at Logan Elm on Thursday night. Really tough place to play. And I know they had a size advantage across the board, but man, that Logan Elm team, it doesn't matter what size they are. They're going to play their fannies off. They're going to defend you all over the court, and they were able to get a lead on Zane Trace with about 4.5 minutes left. And Zane Trace finished on like an 11-2 run after that. They just dominated winning time, which I thought was really impressive. A good sign of the maturity that Coach Kello has with his group out at Zane Trace. Obviously Cam Evans is just out of this world. Luke Johnson, Triton Davidson, yeah. Nick Nesser, obviously Colby Swain, Bryce Johnson made a big three off the bench in the first half for him. He looks a lot better this year. Just looks like he's got so much more confidence, can really fit into that, Chad Eisen role from last year. And, I was really impressed with the Zane Trace boys this week. I mean, obviously we knew how good they're going to be, but, I thought it was a really impressive week for them.
Benton County has them Tuesday night over here.
Yes.
So I'm hoping for snow. Shane, your team of the week.
Well, I there's four or five to highlight here. I don't want to make this segment too long. I think John highlighted the Zane Trace boys really, really well, so I won't be repetitive there. But again, that was outstanding. You mentioned the Adina girls. The one thing I wanted to mention there on top of what you said is not just the sophomore class, not just the leadership of Stark, but the defensive end in terms of what they're doing is not by accident. I mean, these kids toward the end of last year really started to come on my radar with this, and Coach Day and his staff have done a tremendous job. And part of what it is, John, is their bigs that we've just talked about, back to the basketball, are able to really athletically defend. So, like when you talk about Fogelsong or Ader and some of the kids, there's another senior, Abby French. She does an outstanding job energy wise and go. And I watched that Logan Elm game, and I'm telling you right now, that loss was almost as impressive as any win that they've had so far this year. And I'm telling you, it's a game that in the second quarter, Logan Elm dodged serious bullets, because there's a couple shooters for Adina that are really, really capable, that had about four or five really quality looks that just didn't go in. I mean, that was a game Adina easily could have led by 7 or 8 at halftime. So I was almost as impressed in that loss against Logan Elm. Logan Elm's a really good basketball team, has a really good guard, play. So I think Adina was well said. And then you mentioned the Westfall win, but let's give Westfall girls credit because
it was a big win.
Right after they appear like you could get away from them early, kind of goes back to my headline, Bruce, of, you know, too early to say. You know, as soon as people around Westfall maybe start to panic there, what would that have been, 0-3 at that point? They come back. Well, but 0-3 going into that game, right? So, yeah, you're right. You're staring 0-4 in the face, and then you go and you beat McLean. So, and it was good to see Dudgeon and Mullins and Farmer kind of get going there a little bit because those are kids in our league we know can just – I don't want to say easily, but again, their talent, their skill set, and their matchups—they can easily go get you 15 or 20. Any of those kids can on a given night. So it's kind of good to see them against a good defensive team get going a little bit because offensively, we know how tough a matchup they can be. So I think those are some of the teams there on the girls' side, and then. You know, when I go over to the boys' side, I think Zane Trace is well said. I think Uniota. But the thing I had down here is I hate to repeat last week is I don't know because no one's played.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to what we talked about in terms of our league didn't play and then the other leagues did play. So it goes. I will throw out one example of my headline into this topic of, like, say, the Paint Valley boys, for example. It was good to see Bryce Newland starting to creep back into some scripted minutes and so forth. But, you know, I know he comes in, he blocks a shot, hits a three right off the bat, and it's just amazing to see just what his presence means to that team. So, you know, let's just calm down with some expectations here. You play a good Leesburg Fairfield team. You play at Peebles. You're going to play Zane Trace to start to let – you know, just, again – Just let it unfold. Let the season unfold here with the particular team you watch and the different things. If your team gets off to a great start, by all means, celebrate that and get excited about it. But if your team does get off to a slow start, try not to hit the panic button and give the coaches and the kids a chance to learn from it and get better.
On our weekly winner segment here, we're going to go with player performance. John, what have you in that realm?
Now, I'm going to go to Uniota. Our point guard, Isaac Little, he averaged 23.5 points, 7 rebounds, and 4 assists a game in Uniota's 2 wins this week. Didn't have his best floor game on Friday night in a really physical game with Logan, but then went 12 of 14 from the line, including 9 of 10 from the free throw line in the fourth quarter. And you kind of know what you're going to get with Isaac. He's going to shoot really well from the free throw line. He's a really nice shooter. But I feel like he has kind of evolved his game. He's much stronger than he was last year and has become a really good rebounder, has really good instincts. He picked up about 3 steals a game during that time also. Just had a really good all-around week and 2 big wins for Uniota.
Shane, what about your player performance?
Well, I love the Little comment. I love his ability to free throw line. I continue to really follow the balance of Zane Trace. We know about Evans and just how easy he gets it. You know, up to 39th all time now as he's climbing that list really, really fast. And, you know, Swain giving some offense the other night. They had 4 kids at 8 or higher. You know, and then as I go down through, I think that just some of the steadiness of a Chris Chandler and some of the balance I see there. But I don't know if this would be a breakout or not for a future category coming up here, John, but I guess it goes back to were your expectations going in. But the Triton Davidson 20-point 14 rebound against Logan Elm was the one I had down here that really stuck out at me. Against a quality opponent, but an opponent that if they have a weakness at Logan Elm, it's certainly on the front line. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
And Triton really obviously took advantage of that. So I think those are some of the ones that jump out at me.
Okay. And you kind of tipped your hat there, but the next category is player breakout. What about that, John, on the weekly winner segment?
Yeah, mine was Triton Davidson. The first possession, Zane Trace misses a shot. He gets an offensive rebound, missed it, then just immediately just goes back up, rips it back down, and puts it in, which was just kind of a statement for how the rest of the game was going to go. So he had 20 points, 14 rebounds. I don't agree with that. It felt like he had like 20 rebounds all time. He was all over the place. And then, you know, maybe his biggest play of the game was right after Logan Allen took the lead. They were able to draw a charge from Evans on the defensive end. They come down the court. Triton gets a steal, passes out to Cam. Cam gets an easy layup, and they go back up. And that was the game. That was the last time they trailed. He just showed, you know, all the things that he can do. Not just on the rebounding, but he just has a really quick hands, really good floor game overall for him. And you know, if he's playing with that much energy, like he did that night, whoof, like that, that's gonna be a really, really tough team to beat, which they already are. But if you get that from Triton, whew, watch out for them.
Okay, can't wait for Tuesday night. Shane, what about your player breakout?
Well, what was really hard for me here was to take my notes and separate these two categories. Mm-hmm. Because, again, with the expectation, it was funny how I had the one and John had it in the other category, because, John, I fought that a bunch here. You know, I certainly on the girls' side wasn't, you know, wanting to leave out, you know, the steadiness of a Macy Graves. Skylar Heiss has the real breakout performance against Piketon there. You know, we know about Hannah Stark and so forth, but then there's the breakouts of those Adina sophomores that you referenced. I know at Paint Valley we had a young lady who'd been hurt, who she came back and played about half the game against McLean, just getting back from mono, and Olivia Smith. And we know from last year that she's an outstanding rebounder, you know, inch for inch, maybe as good a rebounder as we have in the girls or boys game in the SVC. And three games back now, not even playing full minutes, she's already had like 35 rebounds. So, you know, you're just talking about a kid that'll really go and get it. The other thing on the girls' side with the breakout, you know, Basie at Huntington's had the 25 and 22, but so far Huntington is struggling to find a kid that's scoring more than about six or seven. Again, I'll go back to my headline. Let's not panic. That's two mm-hmm. pretty good basketball teams in terms of Cole Grove and Notre Dame, physical athletic teams. So let's not hit the panic button there, but just something that I know John highlighted in the preview show last week as well. So, and then I go over to the boys' side. I think a lot of our known names really performed. So when I look, you know, breakout, it's a little bit harder for me to find some of those. You know, John, I guess technically Cordell Grubb's a breakout, but I think you and yeah. I, and people that are familiar with the league, kind of just knew, didn't we? I mean, even though yeah. it is quote unquote a breakout, we just kind of knew that this young man could really, really score and really, really play. The young kids at Southeastern, Aiden East stepped there with 10 the other night. They played a good Alexander team well for a half, and then just, you know, Southeastern didn't quite have enough offense, but I know that Alexander group, they can really defend you. So those are some of the things. And then Piketon, I guess Fuller and Potts and Swain, all these kids showing up. We highlighted Gallion last week. I mentioned Chandler tonight. I guess in terms of breakout, I've been a little bit surprised by some of their ability to shoot it. And listening to Coach Miller on the radio, man, his interviews are very, very good. I really like his feel for the game and the way he kind of talks the game. I know he just maybe wants to see them clean up the ball handling a little bit and maybe get some more good looks from some of those kids. Cam DeBoard of Uniota's in my notes here. Certainly don't want to shut anybody out. Cole Miller's a freshman at Paint Valley, 8.8 rebounds. So, you know, I look forward to just seeing a little bit more of the boys' game, John. I guess the girls have given us a little bit more of a sample size. But mm-hmm. I just feel like one of the things on the boys' side that jumps out at me is the lack of games here in the first couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to watching, you know, Chillicothe, Adina, and some good games this week here. And hopefully we'll start to have a better feel for some of these individuals and these topics.
All right, guys, that's going to put a wrapper on the weekly winners segment. Mentioned earlier, we'd really love to have some feedback from different people. And if you're listening to the podcast first, I want to mention, particularly if you're listening to it on one of the major outlets, i.e. iTunes or something like that, if you could give us a rating and maybe a review, favorable, hopefully, that would be wonderful. Also, when we do post on Twitter and Facebook, you can always share that or retweet the tweets. That would be helpful as well. As far as contact information, we'd really love to hear from the two big topics, load management and also, what was the other one? Just left me. Load management.
Post player.
Post player. Oh, yeah. How could I forget that one? We'd love to hear from you, and you may contact either of the two gentlemen. Shane is available on email at admin1@svcsportzone.com. On Twitter, his handle is svcsportzone. Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs, SVC Sportzone, and svcsportzone.com. John's email address, jbruce1018@yahoo.com, and on Twitter, he has the infamous at Coconut Wall Papa, and either of the gentlemen, when they're tweeting about SVC stuff, use the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. So that'll do it for the contact information. Again, love to hear something from you on the post players or on load management, as we're calling it, because some guy in the NBA calls it that, I guess. So, John, what's up for you this week as we look forward?
Well, I'll probably be out at Adina Chillicothe if that if practice gets done early enough for me. But you know, I'll be out, you know, at the girls' games this week. And one thing to look for on Friday, you know, obviously with the unfortunate events with Huntington this week, you know, the girls' game was postponed on Thursday of this week, and it has been pushed back to Friday of this coming week. The way the schedule is set, it will be JV boys at 4:45. Then the varsity girls game will be played after, and then the varsity boys game will be played after that. And the JV girls and the ninth grade boys will be playing sometime in the week after that. I believe it's on that Wednesday. So that's something to look for this weekend. If you're really wanting to get out to that girls game, they'll be playing, I would say around 6. If it'll be like my game was on Friday, it could be like 7. I apologized to Coach Hoops at one point. I was like, dude, I don't know when this fourth quarter is going to end. And there was like 2.5 minutes left. I'm pretty sure it took another 15, 20 minutes. so, you know, that might be a good time to get out there, to catch some girls action. And even if you don't stay for the boys game, you might be able to jump to another local game on that Friday night. So it's that'll be a big game in the SVC. And I'm excited to see different finals from around the week this week, so we can kind of get a better feel on the girls league as well.
Shane, what's on your radar?
Well, those things are well said. I too wanted to throw out in the final thoughts, the thoughts and prayers. Huntington, tough week there, and I know they look to kind of get back into a normal routine this week, and it's just very difficult. But obviously, we send our thoughts and prayers. I know at Paint Valley, we were able to send some things over from our staff to their staff, and I know that's the norm around the league. And again, it's what makes our league so neat in these types of these tough times that we go through, and we're able to come together. And hopefully, sports can also, you know, offer a little bit of a release here to help those people kind of get going a little bit. But again, total thoughts and prayers to the community and to the family involved. And I also want to say that I purposely held the Zane Trace girls out here. I didn't mean to overlook them there, but I wanted to hold them in my final thoughts because one of the topics that's coming up, John, that I would love to get to somewhere in the next couple of weeks is program development. And the Zane Trace girls have really kind of caught my eye here in terms of this. And when we think breakout players and Lauren Lane and so forth, she had 20 in a game earlier this week. And, you know, that's a group that's starting to become a year or two older. And, you know, we talked about it about 6 or 7 years ago there that the Huntington program went through. And then the Adina program has kind of gone through it. And the Zane Trace program's working through it. And it's just neat to see. It takes time. You know what I mean? I remember the analogy we used on SVC Sports Talk a while back, you know, the crock pot versus the microwave. And, you know, we live in that result driven society, and it's tough. But I think program development, it would be a really neat show. Someone to talk to me about, you know, just how long does it take, you know, and, you know, obviously that's a loaded topic. Depends on where you're at when you start, you know, what do you have coming up, you know, so forth. What foundation pieces do you have in place? But I think that that would be a pretty good topic. So I look forward to studying some of those topics. That 3-point topic, if fans think there's more there, we certainly can maybe work it into a show. But as I said last week, what makes our basketball show so fun and so unique is we're able to really take one sport. Now these topics go boys and girls. So guys, I appreciate it. Loved having Josh on tonight as well. We'll get that information up, a link where you can get your order form in and he can get you a copy of that. Maybe just in time for, before Santa visits, maybe it could be a nice gift for that basketball junkie in your family. So guys, on that note, we'll go ahead and get on out of here and we'll do it again next week, and we'll see what the fans have in mind for us, and we'll talk a lot more SVC basketball. So until then, fans, throughout the week for boys and girls, make sure you're checking out SVCSportsZone.com, including some wrestling coverage that'll get going this week. And as always, we'll do our best to keep it 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.